Welcome back to another episode of the Native Podcast Experience. Today on the line, we have UX designer JM. JM won the daily. And I already said his title is UX designer. He talks a little bit about mental health as well. And I'm pretty much a jack of all trades kind of guy in the world of social. That's enough for me. I'm going to let JM introduce himself.
Hey, what's up? My name is Jonathan Martinez. Call myself JM most of the time. People call me JM. That's the thing. It's easy to say that. I'm a UX professional. And I'm just here to shoot the breeze with KT, man, and answer whatever questions he might have for me today, you know, and just have a dope conversation.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And we're going to start off by saying, what was that interest and that passion like when you first started in the UX world? What got you hooked and interested in it?
How did I get interested in doing UX?
Yeah, a little background, yep.
So it started, like, I've always been a creative person, mm-hmm. So it just started with me wanting to do something creative for a living, and I got into graphic design. I actually went to school for graphic design for about 2 years, and I earned a degree while I was homeless also. It's not something that I talk about too much, you know, but that's a reality of what I had to face at the time. And I was working just like designing print, you know, so like business cards, banners, you know, advertising materials that people would need, like marketing and advertising materials. So, you know, naturally at the time, technology was just growing and more people were using the internet, and the internet grows every day. So it was just a natural progression. I started getting more into like web design and design of mobile apps, and just transferring the same skills. So basically, how I got into UX is I learned that there were openings for a role called UI UX designer, and that sounds like a huge buzzword, very jargony, but that was the name of the title at the time, and I had no idea what that was. So I started looking more into it, and I started realizing that it was in line with a lot of the skills that I already had. So, you know, I started getting on a path to learning more of those skills and how I can get into that role. So that's pretty much how I got into it, you know. I landed my first role 2 years, actually, after I had graduated from college. So, you know, It took a little while, but I got in there. I got into it.
Yeah, you just took a little patience and you got in there. So tell me a little bit about, without going too in-depth, what was it like balancing, knowing you're back against the wall with being homeless and also going to school? What was the balance like, and what was the instincts you had to basically nurture yourself into?
So I'm not really sure what you mean by balance, but
what was like the balance emotionally like? How did you handle the emotions going to school?
Oh, I managed my emotions. So the important thing for me at the time to keep in mind was to just accept that this is reality, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, I lived in a, while I was homeless, I lived in a lot of different places. So it started with like going from hotel to hotel, and then the hotels got really expensive. You know, and then some nights maybe I would sleep on a bench or, you know, somewhere outside, you know, really not meant for human habitation. And then I started finding out about homeless camps in the area that were in the woods. So I set up a homeless camp, and that's I did that for a little while I was going to school also. So it was just... Mm-hmm. Making sure that I, just making sure every day, I basically lived every day for the day, you know? There was really nothing else to think about. Going to school had, for me, had to be a priority because I didn't realize that exactly what I was doing with student loan debt, you know? So, like, I took out some student loans, you know, school was not free, and, I thought that what I was doing at the time was going to bring me a huge return on investment. I thought that going to school and taking on all the debt and the student loans would help me. I thought that the degree would help me to be successful, and it didn't really turn out that way. It actually got more difficult from there.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, man. It's crazy just knowing that your situation was like that, and yet you're still helping others and still trying to make a difference. That it's admirable for sure.
Yeah, try me. I
No,
appreciate that.
absolutely. We don't get many just straight homelessness stories on this show. So to get that background, we've had poverty and all that, but just to get that straight homelessness, not living under a roof, taking that for granted. It shows that you can do that. But now transitioning a little bit into the UO. So what are you currently working on? I know we touched on the pre-call about Lambda a little bit. We'll get into that in a second. But just tell me what you're currently working on, and we can expand on that.
So what I'm working on right now is I'm working on just like personal projects, and my personal project is to put together a lot of content for my personal brand, basically, which is JM the Creative. So basically what JM the Creative is me, right? JM. And what inspired that was that whole time that I was homeless and going to school, I really thought that school was the answer. I thought that school was going to get me ahead. After I graduated with my 2-year degree, I tried to go for a BFA afterwards. And when I in one of the classes I took, they suggested that I move away from a brand that I had created for myself at the time, because I was very much interested in being more of an artist, just like a person who just creates like digital art, illustration. That was more what I was interested in. That's what my interest was at. So at the time, I called myself Jay the Artist, and they recommended that I stray away from that if I want to be how you say it? If I want to get into different types of projects, right? Because the projects that they were showing me were not just like illustration type projects and stuff like that. Everything was really transitioning into web and mobile design. So, they highly recommended that I focus just on my name alone. But I was thinking my name at the time, I was thinking my name is really long, right? It's Jonathan Martinez. So there's 8 letters in Jonathan and 8 letters in Martinez. It's very long. When I was looking at domain names, JonathanMartinez.com, was just like too long. And it's also a common Hispanic name, so I felt like I needed to differentiate myself. So I just use JM the Creative. It's very simple. And my what I'm trying to communicate to people right now is that I call myself the Tupac of UX. So I know you've probably seen that on social media,
Yeah.
but basically what that's about is is I'm adding a little bit of pop culture to my brand. I feel like that's a great strategy. A mentor that I had told me about it. He told me when you're branding yourself, adding pop culture to your brand is a really good move. So I've been getting a lot of the feedback about it. It's been creating conversation. It's been sparking people's interest. So I'm rolling with that right now. And what the Tupac of UX basically means is that I'm just gonna come and show up authentically as myself in everything that I do. So just being really transparent, being really honest. That's why I'm on here, and I'm not afraid to say that I've been homeless. I'm not afraid to say that I've struggled, that I've made mistakes, because that's a part of showing up and being true to who you actually are, instead of me trying to. Oh, you got a call?
You're good.
Oh, yeah, man. You gotta take that call, take that call.
Sorry about that. Telemarketer, keep it going.
Okay, telemarketers, those people are annoying, man. Stop interrupting the Up podcast right now.
I know.
Robocall, stop it. Yeah, I get a lot of robocalls too, man. It's crazy.
I know, man. It happens. But yeah, keep it going. It's a good story. Keep it
Yeah,
going, man.
just to wrap up that thought real quick, it's I'm not afraid to say these things, talk about these things, as opposed to trying to flex on social media, which is something I see a lot of people do. A lot of people are flexing on social media, showing that they got money, cars, and usually it's just a facade that they're creating online, or in a more practical sense,
Oh, yeah.
people are flexing in a way where they're saying that they're at this level where they aren't, maybe in the UX space or in the tech space, or they're saying that there's some level of entrepreneur that they're not, and I just don't believe in doing that for my personal brand. Just showing up who I am, I feel is going to be a long-term play, and it's going to help me to build it where I want it to be,
Yeah, I think the long, you make a great point of not, you had to change your, I guess you could say your style name, and calling yourself the Tupac of UX is going to show up and show out. I think it's important that you stay genuine. I mean, would you say, of course, in any industry, of course, everyone says it's common sense, be authentically you, be genuine, all that. But would you say as a UX designer, your style comes out more in what you make compared to, let's say, a graphic artist? You feel like with the UX, you can kind of almost see your vision, your personality in the experience every time you make something.
I guess, yeah, maybe. I'm not really too sure about that. I think what makes the way that I work more unique is
Okay.
how I approach my process for designing. So, a big difference, and with UX too, there's a lot of different roles in UX, by the way, just to give some context, right?
Yeah, go for
So
it, go for it.
you have people in UX who just do research. You have people in UX who focus only on like brainstorming and wireframing and ideation, and you have people who just focus primarily on just visual design, and layout and stuff like that. But for me, I'm capable of owning the whole process from research through strategy, design, and then delivery of all the documentation. So the way that I approach it's always you're designing for someone. It's an intentional design. You're trying to help somebody who might be struggling with something. They're struggling typically to accomplish a task, and my role is to make it either more engaging for them to accomplish that task, maybe make it easier for them to accomplish that task by removing different points of friction so that they can accomplish the task faster. So these are the things that I focus on when I'm designing, and I'm really vocal and open about why I choose to design things a certain way, and stuff like that. And I think that's really where the Tupac of UX really comes out, is that I'm not afraid to speak to people. I'm not afraid to present my ideas. I'm just not gonna keep everything to myself. I'm always going to speak up, when I need to speak up.
Right, advocate for the things you want, not for the things you have already. Because I think when you advocate for something or you make a style choice or a lifestyle decision, especially in the UX world, you have to know it, that if you're not authentically you and you're not trying to make the experience the best and have those technical jargon, of course you have technical jargon, but if you can simplify it the best you can and make sure the experience works for the other user, they'll thank you back for sure.
Yeah, it's all about the people who use the product.
Right.
It's all about that at the end of the day. The thing about me just like speaking up and being authentic is there are a lot of people who choose to be quiet and not speak up about certain things, and that's something that I'm not gonna do. I feel like I'm a loudmouth from New York, so I'm just gonna be that all the time. And sometimes people are just like, sometimes people, I guess, are, I don't know how to explain, they're taken aback, or it shocks them a little bit that I'm just so open to say things. I'm so expressive, and It shocks me in a lot of ways how introverted people can be and how quiet and how shy, you know? So I'm just the opposite of that.
Yeah, a little bit more extrovert, a little bit more outspoken. Nothing wrong with that. You know, I think that we need a balance of outspoken versus inspoken, you know, internal versus external, especially in the environment. Now you did, so when you, we talked a little bit about this in the prequel, now you're a little bit more working from home after some of your injuries. How is not only the injury affect you, but how is that balance like from working from home and trying to stay motivated?
It's challenging. It's really challenging to work with people, you know, solely from your computer, right? Using your computer and your phone as ways to stay connected with people. There's a lot of breakdown in communication because you're not physically in an office where you have access to see people face to face. So it can be very challenging. But I still enjoy working in the comfort of my own home. It doesn't bother me. I'm pretty much a self-starter. I'm self-motivated. I have a lot of intrinsic motivation. I don't typically need outside things to motivate me all the time. You know, some days you're not gonna feel motivated to do things, and you might need some outside motivation that helps me a lot of times is you know, definitely getting good feedback on what I'm already doing is good motivation. Knowing that I'm gaining some momentum and picking up speed is good motivation for me also. And sometimes I might, if I'm feeling down, I might listen to like a motivational speech or something like that, you know. As far as my injury is concerned, and I'm glad you brought that up too, because I talk about my injury a lot. You know, it's the biggest challenge right now that I'm facing. I consider it a huge UX problem because it's a product that was implanted into my body with the purpose of repairing a defect that was in my body. So the purpose of this implant was to improve my quality of life, and that didn't happen after my surgery. So I've been living with chronic pain now for about 2.5 years, going on 3 years in April, and I'm really making an effort and a goal to try to have this product removed from my body, you know, and just hope and pray that, you know, I don't suffer any permanent damage of any kind, you know, and hopefully that I can gain my quality of life back. But I definitely write about that a lot in my Medium. So I have a different Medium. And what I'm doing with my Medium now is I'm leaving a lot of my articles unlisted and putting them as links inside of one big article so that they're categorized. So I have a category that it's a post that says my journey through chronic pain or something like that. And it's on there. And if people need more context and they want to find out about that, they could just read it there for sure. It has a lot of detail.
There you go. I think you make great points about living from home and living from working from home and being a self uber motivated person, right? You don't need a external source, for example, like a motivational quote or a motivational post to keep
And
getting.
if people are struggling with staying motivated, like what works for me is, yeah, it's just understanding the two different types of motivation. You have intrinsic motivation, which is internal, and you know, that could be like for me, if I have injuries, I need to have this product removed from my body surgically. Those things motivate me, you
Right.
know. And then extrinsic motivation, which could be listening to a motivational speech, you know, things like that, maybe some goals that you want to accomplish, you know. So it's a good idea that if people lack motivation to just, you know, peel the layers back and just go deeper, especially with on the intrinsic part, you know, to figure out the true why you want to do what it is that you do. Because you find yourself not motivated, it's probably because you don't know why you want to do the thing that you want to do in the first place.
That actually brings me a good point. You make up a very good point here, because I think anybody trying to live with chronic illness, or any type of people trying to live with any type of injury, would you say accepting it and saying yes almost when you first get diagnosed, or when you first know this is happening, is a better mindset going into it because you're ready for it and can adapt faster? Or do you feel you just have to run its course as day by day? It's hard to tell.
Definitely, I live day to day, so that's a definite. I think what makes my situation unique in a sense is because it's something that's not heavily documented. It's very controversial in the media. There are a lot of commercials on TV about hernia mesh complications, and it really skews people's perspective on what's really happening to people and what's happening to their lives as a result of the implant. So it's really shaping the way people think about it, and it's not accurate, right? So what is accurate is, this form of treatment for repairing this type of defect is considered the golden standard of treatment, and that's their preferred method of care for people who have hernias. So when you go against the grain and you say, "Oh, I'm having complications from this surgery," what's happening is they're denying that I'm having complications from, the surgery. They're denying that my body is rejecting this foreign object, and it's just a constant denial of everything that's going on, and then manipulation and foolery, to try to trick me into thinking that it's all in my head. That this doesn't exist, this is not happening, anything that they could possibly say, and then they use their expertise as leverage, right, over you. Well, you're not a doctor, you didn't go to medical school, you don't know. But the fact of the matter is, I understand how I'm feeling in my body. My body is sending me unique signals that are letting me know that something is seriously wrong. And you got to listen to your body when you're in that situation. So that's what's unique typically when it comes to more common treatments or common issues. There's a clear diagnosis that can take place. And with this situation, there's no real clear diagnosis. So that's the issue. And I'm not the only person who has chronic pain either. So I'm not even gonna, I'm just, again, it being the Tupac of UX in this moment right now, showing up, letting everybody know that I'm not afraid to speak on this controversial topic, of hernia mesh and chronic pain, because a lot of people don't want to talk about it. And there's a stigma around it, that when you have chronic pain and you talk about it, you're making other people feel uncomfortable, So it can be a tough thing for people to talk about. They might be ashamed, or they might be tired of talking about it because they're tired of convincing people that their pain is real, that they have an invisible illness, and so on and so forth. And I've met a few people at Lambda School that have chronic pain also, and you'd really be surprised, how many people are actually trying to get into working from home and doing remote work because they might be bedridden or homebound and can't leave the house. So they really don't have any other options to support themselves besides opting out for remote work.
Yeah, it is interesting. You make an interesting point. I think that's a. We'll shift gears in a second about landing school. But you make a good point, right? It's case by case, right? We can't just say one person is whatever you do is going to work for someone. That's why whatever JM does, it works for JM. But no two chronic illnesses are the same, for sure.
Definitely. It's definitely a case by case thing. I definitely feel like, and I don't want to use any thinking errors right now, thinking that I'm so unique and I'm the only person that's going through this, because I know that I'm not the only person going through it, but it's not super common either. There are people who have had hernia surgeries and they've had mesh repair, and they're not having any complications. and they're able to live life normally and do normal able-bodied things that people can do, you know? And in my case, that's, you know, not the case, and there are no objective tests that can prove that this is happening to me either, which makes it even more of a challenge, you know? And then, like, with lawsuits and what people are
Oh,
saying
yeah.
on TV, you know, my specific case can't be taken on because I need to have the mesh removed first before any law firm will take my case. And they're really running away from the specific product that I have implanted, which is called UltraPro Hernia Mesh. So, you know, if anybody wants to dive deeper into that online, there isn't a lot of information out there. So if you search that, you'll find it very quickly. And you'll see why, you know, lawyers are running away from from those cases also. So I don't really have a case right now. And, you know, it's been a struggle to find a skilled surgeon that can remove mesh, but I think I'm on the right track right now, and I'm in a good place so far right now. Everything's for me is moving in a forward trajectory, and I'm in a place right now where I'm also in transition. So
Yeah, you make an interesting point there, just transition. I think everyone's going to go through transitions. Everyone's going to go through their ups and downs. Everyone's going to understand certain things about the, you know, process of lawsuits and all that, as you said, the whole nine yards. And how you, we talk about mindset and how you can get that mindset wrapped around it and how you push forward through those days, and how you even block out some of the noise in a world of so much analysis paralysis and information overload coming at you every 10 seconds, it seems.
that literally happens to me every day. I'm
Yeah,
not
go
even
for
gonna
it.
lie.
Yeah, expand on that. That's good. That's a good talking point right there. Go for it.
That literally happens to me every day. That was happening to me today, as a matter of fact. Before I hop on this call, I'm in the middle of working on a Build Week project for Lambda School. And basically, to give some context, like Build Week is the last week of every month. Every month is a unit. And the last week of every month, we do this this project called Build Week, where you know, we work on a big project, you know, and we work on actually building it out on our own, managing our own schedules, managing all of the tasks on our own, interfacing with you know, cross-functional teams and stuff like that. So there are times where I look at what I'm supposed to do, and I might overthink it and get really overwhelmed and have a lot of anxiety, and that happens, you know, and that's analysis paralysis. Literally, the other day, I got on a call with, you know, somebody who is at Lambda, which is called a section lead. So they have a higher level of authority, basically. And this is a person who's there to help me and work with me. And I literally got through a task that I was supposed to do in only 15 minutes. And I thought it was a task that would probably take me an hour to do or so. So I was really overthinking it, you know? And that happens, man. You know? Sometimes what we need, I think, to combat that is we need to talk to people who understand the position that we're in, you know? That maybe understand a little bit, people who can empathize with us and hold us a little bit more accountable, you know. That accountability, I'd say, is super important.
Yeah, man, you make a very good point, especially in today's world. Accountability is it's not becoming less and less, but I feel like it's something that needs to become more in the forefront, because you can't really do anything without holding your own actions to a high, not a high standard, but to your own standards, whatever that means to you. And say you do something wrong, own up to it. That's the biggest thing we see in every industry or every passion. Not owning up to mistake and not being accountable for not so much deadlines, but giving back to your fans, giving what you put in is what you put out, input output. So makes a good point, for
Definitely.
sure, for sure.
Definitely what you put in is what you get out of it, for sure. Out of anything in life, I believe that.
100% on that. So we'll transition now to Lambda. So for people who don't know what Lambda is or have never heard of Lambda School, just give us like a quick IL on what that is about and what's your experience like with Lambda. I know we talked in the pre-call about a mental health program. Just give me the whole breakdown of what your experience is like
Yes,
with working with
I'll
people.
do my best to give you guys as much context as possible on this thing that I'm doing that I feel is very life-changing, really. Lambda School is phenomenal. So on a really high level, basically, Lambda School is a coding boot camp, but they offer different programs. So they offer UX design, which is the program that I'm in, which doesn't really require learning much code at all. And then you have full stack web development, you have data science, and you have iOS, Android development. So basically, they're teaching you tech skills at this boot camp. And it's 100% online. It's not your typical online course like Udacity or Udemy, where you watch videos and you kind of just go through video modules and stuff. This is actually live. You get on live conference calls via Zoom, and everybody stays in contact with each other through Slack. And if you're not familiar with those tools either, they're just like Zoom is just a video conferencing tool, and then Slack is basically an instant messaging tool for Teams. So that's basically how we communicate, how we all stay in contact, and the accountability is unreal. It's crazy accountability. It's not something you just set it and forget it. It's very intense. You have a lot of work to do in a very limited amount of time, and it's definitely a career accelerator. It's a 9-month program, but when you're done with this program, you're pretty much guaranteed to get a job in tech. Their unique value proposition is that if you don't make a job making more than $50,000 a year, you don't have to pay them anything. So it's zero cost upfront. And the way that they make that possible is through an income share agreement. I'm not a lawyer or anything. I don't understand all of the ins and outs behind income share agreements. But it's what makes it possible for their business to be in business right now, because it offers just about anybody an opportunity to and access to get into a high-paying career in tech. So it's phenomenal. It's given me a platform to do work. Like, I'm not new really to UX. As we talked about, I'm not used to it, but I got sidetracked. I got sideswiped by this injury that I didn't expect to happen to me. And Lambda School is giving me an opportunity to reinvent myself. So I'm taking advantage of that, and I think it's a really great program. I'm not getting paid or sponsored to say this at all, but based on my own personal experience, it's a really great program. To if you're into moving quickly, so this is ideal for people who are probably switching careers, or have been out of the design industry for a little while and are looking to get back into the design industry. It moves really fast and really quick. So I definitely would highly recommend it, because I've taken many different routes. I've taken the self-taught route. I've took different online courses, and I even went to college. I took multiple different routes, and I feel like this route that I'm taking right now has been the most productive and has yielded the most results for me.
Interesting. You make a very good point. That's interesting. You don't pay anything, and only when you get the job. It's a good incentive system if you think about it, right? You get the free, and you get in this opportunity, this luxury. You get that free opportunity, but to get the free, you also got to understand you're going to pay them back. So put your time in, make the accountability, and I think it teaches you personal development too. because the
Yeah,
more you.
they actually invest in you is what they're doing.
Yeah,
So
that's
their
what I'm
whole
trying to
unique
say.
value is they're investing in you, and they don't win unless you win. So they have to prepare you well enough to have a lot of value in the marketplace so that you can land that really high paying job that you want to get in tech, you know? And then after you land that job, how the income share agreement works is you pay 17% of your annual salary for up to 2 years. So that's how that works.
Interesting. Well, you mean, that's something that we don't see many programs do that where they oh man, you just don't hear that all the time because they're investing in new schools really don't.
Lambda School is very unique. It's very innovative. I love being a part of the community. I love what they're doing over there. I think it's a great program. And you know, it's not a perfect program, you know, because it's still a startup. It's still very new. It's been around for about 2 years now. And I have been watching it from afar, you know, for a little while. I was hesitant at first because, you know, I had never heard of a program that didn't want money up front. So I was very cautious about, you know, wanting to get involved with Lambda School. But I see that it's very much legit. You know, it's growing rapidly. And I feel like their business model is the answer to student debt, to the student debt crisis, really. Like, this is a direct response to the huge student debt crisis that we face as millennials in our generation.
I think we could see some schools taking that up. I really do. I really think because it's such a diamond in the rough, unique business model, investing in you, investing in that lifestyle. That's what really the tech industry, it's a lifestyle. It's we're teaching that, you're preaching that. And giving back and investing in you and waiting for you to be patient to get that career or that passion you want, that dream job. I think more people are going to realize that it's not about the so much the money you put in, more about the work, the actual work, the bread and butter of development that you get out of it.
Yeah,
That's,
it really
yeah.
molds your character. It's who you become that you can be more proud of. You know, it's not just about getting the good job and, you know, getting the high salary or having the good benefits. You know, like it's who you become. Like the character that it just molds you. You know, and I just love the journey that I've been going through. You know, with design, and I'm passionate about documenting, you know, the things that I'm experiencing and sharing it with people in a creative way. You know, it's, you know, hopefully I can help somebody out there, you know, that can listen to this and be like, well, you know what? I can really relate to what he's saying right now. That's deep. You know, I want to connect with people on a very human level, and that's really what UX is all about at the end of the day. You know, designing and developing products that connect with people more on a human level, you know, making people
I
feel
like
like,
that.
wow, the person who built this really thought about me. This is perfect.
I like that you said the human level, right? Because we sometimes forget that we're all humans. You know, we're not perfect, and we're all gonna have those moments where we feel it's overwhelming, and just have that human connection, get that touch in a sense, right? Get that human touch. It humbles you and it makes you resonate with people more. We're getting close to the end, so I want to touch on a couple more topics. I know you recently, I mean, just for a couple of days, but took like a Instagram detox, a little social detox. What's been like detoxing? I know you've done this a couple of times. Do you feel the social detox not only helps you, but what's your experience like? And maybe for someone else who may feel overwhelmed, what's some advice you would give
Social
in the world?
detoxing. Okay, yeah. So try to be real quick about this one. So, because I know we're wrapping up here. So with social detoxing, I didn't really consider it that too much. I think what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to become more intentional about what platforms I need to focus on. You know, I'm a huge Gary Vee fan, and for anybody who doesn't know who Gary Vee is, to give some context, Gary Vee is a entrepreneur from New York City that really focuses a lot on media and talking about creating content on social media. And one of his philosophies is that you need to be on every platform and create 100 pieces of content for each platform and, you know, just distribute contextually across all these different platforms. You know, but I don't think that that works for me at all. So, like, you know, he has a pit like a 80-page deck around his content strategy, which is really useful, you know. But I guess kind of what I'm doing right now with my content on social media is I'm taking kind of that same strategy, but I'm being more intentional about which platforms I choose to spend my time on. So, you know, I don't feel like I should be on every platform. That's the only part I don't agree with. You know, I just don't physically have the time to be on every platform. You know, Gary Vee has a large media team that does video editing and, you know, cuts up the content and breaks it down and, you know, posts the content for him. So, you know, that saves him a lot of time. I don't have those resources. So I'm just really more intentional about where I'm spending my time online, hyper-focused on the UX niche. So I'm trying to be any and everywhere where people are talking about UX. So I focus on being on Twitter and LinkedIn mostly, and also I'm on Instagram. I've been on Instagram for a while. I took a break from Instagram because I wasn't sure of whether or not I should stay on Instagram, but I've chosen to stay on Instagram because there's a huge UX community there also. But I've decided to spend less time on Facebook, so I'm not really on Facebook and some other platforms. Just hyper-focused on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram only.
Interesting. No,
And I'm on Medium. So, you know,
got the
but
writing in there, right?
that's kind of separate.
Right. No, you're right, man. I think you made a great point. I just feel like in society today, unless we have the bandwidth or a team, it's hard to just, even myself, I find that managing 10 platforms, while it's great, at the same time, everyone needs a break or needs a strategy. Or even if you just don't feel it, take those mental health
It's really
breaks.
tough on the mental health side. Right?
Yeah, it
Because
is.
it's emotionally draining, right? It's mentally and emotionally draining to spend a lot of time creating content and posting and distributing and promoting the content, right? It's, you know, it's not that easy. You know, you can easily spend, you know, up to 8 hours just doing content, you know, and I don't really have that kind of time. Like, I have to work on projects, I have to work with my team, I have a lot of other UX responsibilities to focus on at Lambda School. So I don't really have time to, you know, create as much content as I would like. But my strategy is to document what I'm going through, what I'm experiencing, what I think might be helpful for people, and posting that on very specific, very niche environments, you know? So that's where I'm going to go with it. And my mindset with that is, and this is where I think a lot of people mess up. So this is one thing I will take away from Gary Vee, is not to worry about the numbers, right? Don't worry about how many followers you have. Don't worry about how many likes you get. Just post the content that you think is relevant, that you think will help people. And the goal is to just create a library and a collection of content that gives people more context about who you are and what you do so that you can build and establish trust, which increases your authority, right? And that's what people are really looking for. And that's the key in building a personal brand. And it takes time, it doesn't happen overnight. A lot of people think they're gonna get on Instagram and it's like, oh, I'm gonna post something and I'm gonna get a bunch of likes. That's not really how it works, you know? And if you focus only on trying to get likes, trying to get more engagement, then it becomes even more mentally exhausting and emotionally draining for you as the creator. So I say for people, do what is manageable for you. Only you know what your mental health is like. You know what you can handle. You know if you have anxiety or ADHD or, depression, So listen to to not just your body, but also listen to your mind. Be mindful of the energy and where you're putting your energy is the final takeaway I would say from that.
No, it's a great point, man. I think it's about community building. Don't worry about the metrics. Worry about the community as much as you can and just give back for sure. We're going to end it though right here with the final question. What are your goals for the rest of 2019 and beyond a little bit in 2020 and beyond?
So for 2019, I'm not even worried about 2019 anymore, to be honest. We're so close to 2020. I'm just living every day for every day, trying to get past each project, trying to get past each milestone. On any given day, everything can change, and we gotta remember that, that sometimes life can move so fast. And one thing can happen one day that changes your entire life. With this injury, that's pretty much what happened. And so I'm about to make a major move here real soon. I'm gonna be relocating back up north. I'm gonna be in the Massachusetts area. And I'm gonna be starting a new life out there. And yeah, starting off 2020 in a new place, building up network, building up personal brand, trying to kickstart my career as a UX professional, and just get back out there, and get the mesh removed. That's my main priority. Have this hernia mesh removed from my body. I found a great doctor out there. I just need to establish my residency out there, get some insurance, and go see that doctor. And just hope for the best that this will have an extremely positive outcome, because it's still a pretty risky procedure. I could suffer from permanent damage, to my groin because of this surgery. So yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm just rolling with the punches here, KC. That's all.
That's all you can do, man. I appreciate you taking time out of your day. Definitely, just want to pull your social handle so people can find you on social.
I appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me. This is JM. You can follow me on Twitter at JM the Creative. It's my handle on every social media platform, LinkedIn, Instagram. You can find me there. I'm also in the process of developing my website, jmthecreative.com. So definitely be on the lookout for that soon because that'll be the easiest way to get in contact with me. And that's pretty much it. You can always send me a
Sounds
DM, holler at me. I'm available. I'm not nobody
good.
famous.
There we go, guys. Definitely check out JM. Appreciate him taking time. To UP listeners and podcast experience guys out there, appreciate you as always. It's been a pleasure, brother. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy, KC. Peace.
Oh, thank you for listening to the podcast. As always, we hope this episode was valuable. And for more awesome stories, please subscribe. If you have someone else in mind that should hear these episodes too, go ahead and share it. We dare you. Follow us on Instagram at The United Promotion. And for everything else, including show notes and more info on how to become a guest on our podcast, visit linktr.ee/theup. Have a great day.